Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
The Quack Attack is back, baby! That's right, we are here in post-show recap for the second season of Mighty Ducks Game Changers, second season, second episode. I'm here, Kevin Mahadeo, Bronx, New York, I guess now Brooklyn, New York, as always, to talk about this show, but my Canadian co-host has flown off. Who knows where she's gone? Probably the penalty box. She does love picking fights on the ice, so we had to bring someone off the bench. Welcome from last season and from many other things here on the Post Show Recaps Network. Troy, how's it going? Welcome to the ice.
Hello, Troy, aka DJ LaBelle Klein, Louisville, Kentucky. Quack, quack, Kevin.
Quack, quack. Oh my gosh.
We're back, baby. The Quack Attack is back. Wow, I can't believe it. Let's set expectations very clearly from the beginning. while there may only be two of us on this leaderboard of podcast hosts, I still think I'll be in third place because the shadow of Melissa will loom large over the podcast.
Oh yeah, that's really what happened. Melissa tried to get out of here, ran to the forest, the wilds of Canada.
Ended up at a Hilton Garden Inn in Vancouver.
I feel like that's usually what happens in Canada, right? You just wander off and you just end up at a Hilton.
Can we just like jump right into the very, very question that I really have desperately wanted to know since watching this episode? Kevin, are you familiar with the double tree cookies? Like the cookies that are given to guests at the double tree and maybe the Hilton Garden Inn?
I have definitely heard of the legend of the cookies from the double tree. I have never stayed in a double tree myself. I didn't stay in a lot of hotels when I was younger. We always had like just drive straight until we hit family whenever we went anywhere.
Yes. Yeah, so you're basically like the Mighty Ducks going out to LA. There are no stops. You could drive 19 hours, no stops. No, okay. Well, we'll get into it more, but let's just say as a larger person, as a person of size here, I know where the good cookies are. And Hilton Garden Inn, that's a new one to me, but the Doubletree, yeah, the hotel welcome cookies. I'm all about that life.
I love this. I love the hacks we're giving here about cookie eating in this sports podcast, in a way.
Yeah, nutrition, baby. Refuel.
This is the second season here we're heading in. You were here talking with us in the first season, but here we are, episode two. So we're not that far in, but what are your thoughts so far about this season, especially coming off of last one?
Oh man. I mean, let's start with the, like, let's start with the elephant in the room here, which is like, who's watching this show? And I don't mean that in like a we're gonna make fun of it or whatever. Like, it's just like a legitimate question of like, who is the audience for this show? Are we the target audience for it? Is it like kids and their families? Are they watching the show? I'm very curious to know, because I think as we get to like season two, I think we have moved from just Mighty Ducks movie nostalgia into a legit like Disney show, right? It's like a Disney Channel show about the Mighty Ducks. We have the very slightest bit of nostalgia going on, you know, in episode one. But, you know, no Gordon Bombay here. No real known characters from the Mighty Ducks franchise. And so I think the question like bears as I'm watching these first two episodes, like, am I watching a kid's show? Am I watching this for fun? Like, who? It's fine. It's fine. It's perfectly like, I'm not mad at it. Am I craving like episode three, episode four right now? Not necessarily. But I'm perfectly fine with like my time investment having watched it.
Yeah, there's a level, I think I was talking to Melissa about this in episode one, that for me, there's such a just sit back and watch and enjoy feel to it, right? Like there isn't a necessary like, oh man, I've got to watch this. But it is like when I turn it on, I'm just like, I'm having a good time. Like there's, I don't have to worry about what dragon family is eating the other dragon family. I don't have to worry about who Sauron is. There's so many levels to like, you don't have to worry about that stuff when you watch the show. And it's just kind of fun at times and a little goofy. But that's what the Mighty Ducks have kind of been, right? Like that's what those movies were to an extent. And I think you're right that like who the audience is feels so different, because you might as well drop the two, keep follow that one, but it does feel like this is its own thing now, right? Especially with Gordon Bombay not in the season. You have the splash nostalgia you mentioned with the, you know, showing up of the Bash Brothers at the very beginning of the first episode, but this is its own thing. There's echoes of plot-ish elements from Mighty Ducks 2, but like it's very much its own entity at this point. We're no real heavy connection to the films anymore. And yeah, it's weird. Who is it then for, right? Because I'm enjoying it enough that I'll keep watching it because I'm having fun. Also, I'm podcasting about it. But did a lot of people leave when Gordon left? Like, there's so many questions on that.
Yeah, I have some unanswered questions here. I think it's also, you know, worth just being real honest. Like, season two slipped by me, right? It just like popped up in my Disney, like my Disney Plus, without me really thinking about it. And I enjoyed season one. I watched the whole season. I podcasted about it, at least one episode with y'all. And I think I'm surprised that I wasn't tracking on it more closely. But boy, that also slightly tells me something about like maybe where I should set my expectations for the rest of the season. Now that said, I think it's perfectly fine. Right? And I think you're right. It's like a nice escape. You don't have to think too hard. You know, if you've got multiple high fantasy shows going on out there, this is low fantasy to no fantasy here, right? It's kids stuck in basically dorm rooms around a hockey arena. I do think there's something really funny around how I couldn't believe it when the season started with them going to LA, because I was like, D2? Is this what we're doing? I swear, if season three starts with them going to a prep school, I'm done. I'm just like, I'm out.
No love for the third film. A lot of people feeling, you know, not feeling that much. We do have a bit of an echo here, I think, or Melissa and I were saying that Coach Cole, Josh Duhamel, a.k.a. not Timothy Oliphant, has a little bit of the Gordon Bombay D2, you know, we're in it for the hockey, we lost the sight of fun, but also a touch of Coach Orion from D3. So there seems to be like a combo there. They're certainly pulling from a few things. We might get a prank war, depending on how this season goes. It's just straight out of D3 right there. Like you mentioned, they're in dorm rooms practically. Mm-hmm. But like, as for what you're saying, I blame that personally on the algorithm. The algorithm always is, everyone wants to believe in the algorithm. The algorithm is a mess. Like this happens on Netflix all the time, which has arguably one of the best streaming algorithms of serving people stuff, but it's lost itself in its own data, right? Just being like, we think you might like this one thing, even though you watch this other thing. Here, watch this instead. And you're like, what are you talking about?
Yeah, I mean, look, I could continue to watch The Ground is Lava, or I could watch something that I'd rather actually finish. I don't want to hate on that show too much. That was a delightful escape when that show was first introduced. I think, you know, D2, did it come in with a splash of Game Changer season one? No, it did not. But that's okay. It is, you know, we always judge the dog against the standards of the breed. And in this instance, you know, Mighty Ducks Game Changers is a family friendly show that is meant to be easy watching, easy binging. And that's exactly what we're getting. So I'm perfectly fine with it. I think for me, when I think, you know, we'll kind of dive into episode two a bit more specifically, but I think in as much as I think about episode one as well, I have like one lingering question here, which is like, is Coach Cole like a villain slash love interest? Like they're trying to walk this super fine line of him being the antagonist, but also being the love interest, because we know that's where Lauren Graham needs something to do here, right? And like, that's really unfortunate for Alex's character, but like, I don't know. Are they walking that line well? I'm not sure. I just know it's a really tough line to like make someone who is a punk, but not too big of a punk.
Right. And they are desperately trying to make sure it's there, right? Which leaves a little bit of just like, okay, so is the villain hard work? Hockey,
right?
Like it's tough.
The villain is pizza. The villain is pizza.
The villain
Kevin.
Is pizza, which really just makes that's the real. Anyone who throws pizza in the trash, that's your villain
straight
for the
straight to the penalty box.
Like
straight,
unbelievable.
Like, send it to a whole. Well, first of all, I have to check my opinions. I have strong opinions about cheese pizza being the figurative pizza. Like, come on, like get some toppings on there, okay.
But, get some pepperoni, please.
Yeah, please, right? But, like, put it all in the trash? No, I would be cubing that up. I would be fishing it out of the trash. No question.
Oh, yeah. Well, let's get into this episode before we dive into the dumpster ourselves. So, this starts off from last episode. It's the next day. Loud alarms are going off. Alex thinks it's a fire alarm, which, reasonable. And runs out, but no, it's actually the alarm for game time. This is also, by the way, a nightmare alarm. This alarm is like, that's like end of the quarter, end of the third, right? Yeah. That is that alarm.
It's the end of the period in hockey, or a goal is scored in hockey. And I will say this, you know, I said that the Mighty Ducks season two kind of slipped by me until I realized that we were, you know, up on two episodes in already. What also slipped by me is like hockey season is starting. And as a like occasional marginal fan of the San Jose Sharks, I didn't realize like our first game is tomorrow in the season, which is wild. But yeah, anyone who's been to some hockey games like knows that I do not want to be woken up by by that sound.
No. It's funny because Alex is like the only one immediately awoken by it, and it being the hockey sound, I wonder too if the kids are just like, we're used to that sound, so they just like sleep through it. That's like not an alarm for them. That's just things they hear on a regular basis.
Well, I hate to start a story with this one time at band camp, but I went to band camp as a kid in high school and middle school, and at the band camp we went to, which was called Camp Crescendo, the wake up alarm in the morning was John Philip Sousa marches that were literally piped into our cabins at like 7 a.m. Jesus. And let me tell you, after like day two or three, you'll learn how to sleep through it.
Yeah.
You really do. You just got, you know, the stars and stripes forever. You can just snore and snore forever.
That's the adaptation right there. Adaptation for survival and sleep, which is valuable, but not when you're at this camp, not when you're at Epic. So
you must be up and moving.
Yes. And that's what they are, right? The kids are up. They're moving, ready to go. They're having discussions about, you know, Evan is very excited about the fact that you got future Olympians here. Maya's also excited about this because she says bobsledders, how hot are they? Not a thing I've ever considered. I don't know a lot of bobsledders, but, you know, to each their own.
It's a broad mix. I mean, I followed in particular the U.S. and Canadian bobsled teams in my like Olympics fascination. Wide range. We'll put it that way. Wide range. Good glutes. Good legs. But like, you know, let's put it this way. Your pushers, pretty okay. The pilots, they could be just about anything.
I only know the Jamaican bobsled team, specifically the version that was in the Cool Runnings movie, who were actors playing them. That's about my extent of bobsledding, honestly.
With Dougie Fresh. Oh, God.
And the great John Candy as well, in R.I.P.
What a great movie. Talk about, like, Disney movies of the mid-90s. Can you imagine a Cool Runnings Game Changers?
Oh, my God. We're going to actually win this time, guys. We're going to do it.
You just get a bunch of kids in Jamaica. You do the bobsled. Like, I mean, they you know, they've done, I think, a reboot of some type with this, right? But I'm picturing it. I'm telling you, Kevin, if they do a Cool Runnings Game Changers, are you going to podcast about it?
I might. I have one story about Cool Runnings and ice as well, but we'll save that for if that podcast happens.
Okay.
But in this particular case, they're all heading down. Alex has two coffees, doesn't want anyone to judge her. I don't. I have definitely been there. It is a very real Lorelai Gilmore move to have like just two coffees in hand, ready to go. Every time she does something very Lorelai-esque, we're always on eye for that.
Are you, when you're getting two coffees, are you pretending that it's for someone else, or are you just taking the L that, like, no, I'm one of those people?
I think back in the day, I would pretend because I was more self-conscious, and now I'm just like, I don't, you know, my life is a mess. I need to embrace that fact. And so I just was like, no, these are both for me.
Good, good. Yeah. We love that.
You got to know yourself, really, right? That's like the whole big thing. So they're getting ready to get out there. Alex is with them, and they discover that they're all going to be given these wristbands.
Yes.
These wristbands that you talk about, there's no like fantasy here. These are not just like, oh my God, how am I blanking on the Fitbit. Name of those things? Fitbits. Thank you. These are not Fitbits, right? There's so much more than that. They track hand-eye coordination. They track muscle mass somehow. Like, there's so many things that this wristband tracks, including
just
you.
Go with it, Kevin. Just go with it. It's got a GPS built in. I mean,
it's got a GPS and everything.
I am wearing an Apple Watch right now. I will say I have been amazed by the number of things that this can track. So, you know, there are also times that she's a little passive aggressive to me, and we're working on that relationship. But the Fitbit that can track like 37 different things, including like it can, you know, whatever, 12 metrics of heart. Yeah, that's a bit much.
It's a lot. It's also like some real Big Brother shit right there.
Well, it's also some real cost shit. So like, here's my question. Who's funding for this? Like, did all of these kids, like, you know, this Epic camp is like, you know, summer camps are expensive as hell, and especially in LA, and especially hockey. Like, did Alex really get like six parents to pay for this?
It's a real good question, right? Or are they being funded by this organization? But that wouldn't even make sense because it's not a public camp unless they do like a big thing at the end, right? Like maybe there's this big game they're going to play and gets a lot of media attention. Then like maybe, well, there's supposed to be like college scouts there. So maybe whoever made these wristbands is like, we will donate just for the coverage.
Right. I mean, we have shown that the blonde pixie haired assistant, whose name I think we still don't know.
Oh my God, I'm trying to remember from last in? Episodes.
It's literally,
yeah,
never
I'm
been said.
Not positive.
We have shown that like maybe she's not so great at the details. So is there it's a true. Possibility at the end of the season they just get handed a bill? Like, oh, here's how much you owe for your Fitbit.
Whoopsie. it's also with like Fitbits, this is semi-easy to game this system, right? Because you get it. Nick immediately just runs in circles to shoot himself up to number one. It doesn't last very long, but he also semi-games the system a little bit later.
I mean, and if it like really tests muscle mass and other things, like you can't just run around. Anyway, we're gonna give the riders the benefit of it. Like, we're just gonna go get on the roller coaster. We're just gonna go with it. And it ended up being a useful plot device to track down a character later on.
It is very also this ranking system where you see it on the wall. And then what we're going to see, because what basically happens is that they all, you know, they all get their Fitbits. The actual others get into it. Fort Lauderdale boy, you know, starts doing burpees with a bunch of people. So Nick gets dropped out of that first place real quick. Alex talks about her time at camp with Coach Cole and how camp should be fun. You mentioned your camp experience. I think I've mentioned this about myself. I have zero camp experience. I've never been to a camp before. Certainly not like a sleepaway camp or anything like that. Certainly not like sleepaway camp from the horror movie. Haven't been in that situation where someone's just murdering all of us. But that's probably why I haven't gone to camp, is that the fear of murder. Very high for me.
I mean, the reason I never did the like camp where it was, you know, you just go to do summer camp. I only did band camp, right? Which was the, you know, the most sweltering week of heat in Kentucky, out learning how to do marching band shows. But camp kept me away because I do not like the bugs and the critters of it all. So like, you'd actually have gotten me to ice hockey camp before you got me to camp. So this one, you know, I'll see it. I'll allow this ice hockey performance camp as a thing.
Yeah, that's probably like, it's almost like science camp, right? Like we have Sophie later talking about the various camps she's been to. Definitely same with you. I don't want to be, I mean, I notoriously am not a fan of nature. I would not want to be out there going canoeing, making like wallets, whatever else they else
use. Here's my thing. I'm totally down to canoe or kayak. Well, how did we get here, Kevin? I am totally down to like canoe or kayak if I'm like out in the water far away from snakes. But then I find out that there are snakes in the water.
There are snakes in the water. There's moccasins, water moccasins. They're a thing.
Yeah, no, just don't even. Like my heart rate is going up. My watch is gonna yell at me here. I'm gonna drop on the board. Like, just don't even. But okay, let's do some burpees. We'll do some burpees. It'll
do
be
some
fun.
Burpees. Here's, I will say this. Here's how much avoidance of water canoeing and kayaking. I just came back from a trip to Indiana, the small hotel, small town my wife is from. There's a lake there. She was really excited to go kayaking. Well, she was like, we're going to go kayaking. You know, the nephew's going to come. We're going to have a great time. And then when the time was coming, she's like, all right, we're all going to go to a lake. And I kept telling her, like, I don't want to do that. She's like, okay, do you want to go kayaking? And I was like, no, not really. And her sister was like, well, we need to go to Walmart to pick up a bunch of supplies and like stuff for you know, tonight with the family dinner and everything. I was like, I'm gonna go to Walmart. So I rather went errand running at Walmart to buy something, get into a kayak.
If you are listening to this podcast and you did not, and you grew up in like a major city on like the East or the West Coast, okay, and you don't understand what like rural or small town life is like in the United States, Kevin perfectly explained it just now. The world exists such that going to Walmart really is your best option for what to do tonight.
It's true. We went to Walmart like 3 times while we were there. Yeah. I had a good time every time.
Yeah. Oh man. Yeah. So being in the wilderness with critters, high on the list of things I don't want to do. Also in this episode, on the list of things I don't want to do, running long distances for no reason at all.
This is where we get into the other thing I was going to mention, because you have the scoreboard, the giant scoreboard on the wall with the rankings, and you have this segment where we're introduced to the various coaches the kids are going to have to deal with. We've got Coach Jackie, who's doing weight training, and Jackie's got some guns.
We like Jackie. And
yeah, Jackie's fantastic, really trying to motivate Nick to lift up, oh my God, I know this, but now I can't even remember what those things are called, where you lift it over your head. This is so bad. I swear I knew some of these things.
Look, I could spot you right here deadlift. And help you lift this story.
Is it a deadlift or?
Nope, definitely not a deadlift.
It. Deadlift is where you just lift up and then put it back down, right?
That is correct. Uh-huh. Which other ones you know? What other lifts do you know?
Listen, I actually did go to the gym for a long time. Not anymore, clearly, but I used to. It's like, okay. Over the head chest press? Is that
press?
It?
Yeah, like an overhead press. Yeah, that's, you know, or the clean and jerk. That's another version of it.
Hell yeah.
Yeah, so.
But between all the coaches that we're going to talk about here and that scoreboard, this does feel very YA. Specifically the movies we've covered from Divergent, which had a very similar system.
The child assessment montage.
Right? And then this thing here is very much like the Hunger Games. It's like they're in a capital. It's just like, here are your various training areas and the coaches who run it. I just find that very, very funny to like...
So much so, I would actually say, like, double down on this. Like, if I'm the writers, I'm like, do a whole episode where we're just bouncing around between these kooky characters, or like keep coming back to the coaches for more stuff. Like, I want to see what this nutrition coach is going to make them eat. I want to see what, you know, Jackie's got. Like, I think this is a really interesting vehicle for a little bit of flavor and a little bit of frivolity that's right in the sweet spot of Mighty Ducks.
I agree wholeheartedly. Honestly, as a person who's obviously into the YA, like between the Hunger Games and it's just like, you know, the Harry Potter of it all or whatever, the idea of just like, this is hockey school and there's different classes that you learn to train in. And like, I'm into that, right? Like, that's up my alley. Coach Jackie, I also want to point out, mentions she proved that she could lift stuff and got into weightlifting because she had that moment of strength, right? That adrenaline strength that comes when her son was trapped and she was able to lift the car. And then her son grew up and now makes artisanal habanero ketchup, which is not even that spicy. So it's just $8 ketchup, which is something I know you would definitely not buy, Troy, because you do not like condiments, as we discussed on an episode of Dragonfly relatively recently.
Yeah, you know this about me. How about that? Coming in with the hot spice, the habanero-like takes about the bad ketchup. Look, all ketchup is bad ketchup. Quote me on it. Tweet me on it. Find me in the Discord. All ketchup is bad ketchup. So why you would choose to add habanero to it, I don't know. But I don't care also.
Give me a habanero aioli of some sort. That'd probably be my preference. Some sort of buffalo habanero sauce. That'd be my thing.
You're a habanero aioli. Okay, anyway.
I'm spicy. So the other place we have is what's called the Headspace. It's a VR training room where it's a gymnasium for your mind. This is really the part where I was like, it's the Capitol. We're here. We're in the Capitol right now. Nick is amazed by the realism of it so far as someone comes at him in the fictional world and he runs and slams into a wall. I feel like this is where Coob can excel, by the way. The video gamer, I feel like this is going to be his training room at some point.
Right. Wasn't this the moment where he goes, buttons, right?
Yes.
Oh, buttons. It's like my place. Yeah, I think he should be able to excel here. I wish we could have done more with this like little area. I'd love to come back to it and see what's possible. You get the one joke of, you know, the person in the VR who ducks or runs, yes, into something. We've all seen our fair share of TikToks or Vines of that happening. But yeah, okay, fine. I don't know. This could use a little bit more flavor to it. This one was missing the habanero.
This is what I'm hoping, to what your point is, right? Like, we get a little bit more of this stuff as the season goes, because there's a lot of potential for fun for each of these places, especially the VR space. The one that I would love to see in the continued comedic sense is, of course, Coach Rufus, who we mentioned earlier. He is the nutritionist who threw away a whole pizza. Nick rightfully pointing out, this isn't lunch. This is a lecture about lunch.
Yeah, look, if there's anything worse than not eating food, it's talking about food while not eating food.
Yeah,
which is what we're about to do torture for 2 minutes.
We are, and especially something as good as pizza. Like, like making your point by purchasing a whole pizza and tossing it in the trash, first of all, is wasteful in the country we live in, and has like staunch, you know, for the people, socialist types. It's like, what is this? What is this bullshit you're pulling here?
Kevin, can I ask you a Seinfeld adjacent George Costanza-like question about
the
pizza?
Do you go and eat the pizza?
Like, I think the question is like not just a binary, do you go and eat the pizza, but like, what to you is the line at which the pizza becomes unrecoverable from the trash?
So here's the thing. There's a lot that I relate to when it comes to George. There's a lot I relate to with Larry in Curb Your Enthusiasm. I end up siding with Larry quite a bit. Trash food is not one of them. Like, George's excuse was that it was on top. It's still on that wrapper, right? No, I'm pretty sure someone also had bit it already. Even if it's your, you know, girlfriend or girlfriend's mom, like, that's crazy talk. This pizza, this trash could have been emptied. It could just be the pizza. I don't know if I could do it. I don't know if I could do it.
Wow, am I outing myself here as like a trash food apologist? I feel like at very least the like top third of that pizza is like recoverable within like a 7-second window here. right? Like
it would
he
have
put
to
it
also be good pizza though.
Oh, it did not look like good pizza.
No.
I mean, it looked like a New York slice. Like that's okay if it's like
so
a big...
I actually know exactly where that pizza is from.
Oh, do you?
Yes. So
spill the beans, please.
When you watch certain shows, I want you listeners and everyone to pay attention to that box that pizza was in, because that is essentially what we called lot pizza. This is pizza you get on the lot, and I believe it is the Warner Brothers lot specifically. So it is from there. Whenever we see it, me and
so
my
this
wife.
Is, wait, this is like the craft service pizza?
Correct.
That they like basically took that off the craft service table. Like the prop master was like, yeah, we'll take that. And like they threw. That makes me mad. That makes me mad. I mean, they probably bought an extra pizza, but like that makes me sad for the people who worked on set that day.
Well, I mean, they like the you can get it at a building like the cafeteria.
Okay,
you can get more of it, so they could just pick it up from there.
So, have you had this pizza, Kevin?
I haven't, but people I know have. I did not go on the lot enough, and I will say, when I went to Los Angeles, I couldn't do mimic New York slice.
Oh, we're not gonna have this debate right now.
I know.
We're not gonna do this.
I did eat pizza in LA, but it was always I had to do artisanal. I had to do like the weird LA pizza because to me, it was delicious though. There was a lot of that I loved. But if you were like, oh, we're a New York slice style, I'm like, get out of here.
Yeah. Anyway, okay. All right. You and Wolfgang Puck can get your own podcast and talk about it there. But
yeah, let me call him up, my old friend.
Yeah. Okay. Okay. So we've established Troy will eat more of the pizza. Kevin may not eat any of it, which is just more for me.
Really the perfect balance. Exactly. I'm not going to eat just a raw yam. I'll tell you that much. Like give me some like mashed style or something, you know, give me some candied yams. But just like eating, as we see Nick later tries to do, just what look like just half of a raw yam.
No.
Insane.
I mean, don't get me wrong, like teaching kids about nutrition, that's important. Teaching athletes about nutrition is like probably one of the most important things toward them, like, you know, preparing themselves and building their bodies to be professional athletes. Like, I think that's really smart. It's probably a good summer camp. I'm just pour one out for the pizza.
Yeah, pour one out. And not only do they not get pizza, they only get yams. They then have to do the dead man's run, which is a very long run, apparently, through the wilderness. Right after seeing pizza in the trash, what a terrible mood you would be in.
I would definitely escape to the Hilton Garden Inn.
I don't like running, even when I did work out regularly. I hated it. I did it because it is like something you have to do, right? To do cardio, like running is great. I'd hit the treadmill, I'd run, but every time I would hate it. All those people who are like, you get the endorphins, you can go straight to hell. As a person who, like, I worked out a lot, I was doing it regularly, lost a lot of weight, got in great shape. But even by the end, I was still just like, running sucks. Like, I never got to the point where I'm like, I'm having a good time, I'm feeling endorphins. I wanted to run, get it over with, and then hit the weights, and I felt better.
Ooh. I have gotten a runner's high exactly twice in my life.
Was it when you were eating two cookies?
Yeah, right. it was on the way to McDonald's before breakfast ended. No, I just like twice is the numerator. The denominator is many more than twice. And let me tell you, that batting average ain't good. So no, I'm at that point where like running ain't going to be what does it for me. Honestly, like especially running in a pack of people like that where you'd have to keep up, like no, just like social anxiety nightmares right there.
Yeah, it also does remind me of like when I was younger, because I was very bad at running, and you know,
same.
And you're just there and everyone else is going and you're just like wait for me.
Did I cheat on the president's physical fitness test in fifth grade? You bet I did. It's like the only time I ever cheated at anything as a kid. But it's like you're gonna take me who's like a straight A student and loves school and then make me go outside in front of my friends and run a mile around the lap with like Jessica. Like, no, this is not happening.
Jesse, you have a name that you dropped there. Incredible.
No, I just remember. Anyway, there are stories there for another time. But
love yeah, it.
You tell me I have to run 6 laps around this in order to like complete a mile. Guess what? 5. I'm done.
Yep. I did it. I swear I did 6. Yeah, I mean, Nick had the right idea. He's just like, screw this, I'm going home. He'd rather run all the way back than have to deal with running in the wilderness, which I can totally relate to. Meanwhile, we have Alex playing her guitar. She does some bonding with Jace, who we met in the first episode. I believe now we get his name as Jace, and this is Coach Cole's son. They bond over how much of a jerk Coach Cole is, who, of course, then shows up right behind them. This is those moments, right, that you're talking about. This, like, they're trying to walk this very fine line between... Yeah. Is he a jerk or is he flirting? Like, what is the deal here? Because it is almost very difficult to, like, read or feel on these scenes because he doesn't swing one way or the other very heavily.
No, and I think, you know, unfortunately, Jace is a character to me is, like, pretty flat. Like, pretty, like, he exists in order to, like, make the coach a dad. And to like yeah. set up this narrative around father and son. But as a character right now, like he's not particularly interesting to me. They haven't given him really any depth other than like he doesn't want to be there. That's it. That's all we know. We have nothing to like find him lovable, to find him likable. Like we're supposed to root for him because he doesn't want to be there and he's forced to be there and blah, blah, blah. But yeah, this is maybe the thinner parts of the show. I will say before I forget, kudos to Lauren Graham for the guitar playing there. I think it was actually her.
It seemed like it was.
Yeah, it seemed like it was. It was a nice little surprise moment there.
On May 10th, Kingdom of the Planet of the Apes is coming to IMAX and theaters everywhere.
What a wonderful day!
This summer, one movie event will reign.
It is our time.
Stole my village.
I know where they're taking your clan.
Bend for your king.
Never.
Kingdom of the Planet of the Apes. Only in theaters May 10. Tickets on sale now. Rated PG-13. Some material may be inappropriate for children under 13.
At Grand Canyon University, we believe in equal opportunity, and the American dream starts with purpose. Whether your pursuit involves a bachelor's, master's, or doctoral degree, GCU's learning environments are designed for supportive networking and collaboration. With over 330 academic programs, GCU provides a path to help you fulfill your dreams. The pursuit to serve others is yours. Find your purpose at GCU. Private, Christian, affordable. Visit gcu.edu.
Yeah, and I do agree with you in the fact that it's the thinner part. He's not really a defined character yet. He hasn't really done enough, I think, to make him likable, especially since we've lost 2 characters from the first season that we really liked, Lauren and Logan, both gone. So, like, you really got to do a lot to make us, like, feel replaced there, and they're not doing it, I don't think. A lot of the stuff of this episode is really continuing with Alex and Coach Cole, this argument that we will see again and again. Of, you know, the how intense the camp is. She even points out at one point, you can't win summer, which I guess is true to an extent. You can certainly lose in summer because we all do as the world continues to heat up to unlivable levels.
What are we doing here?
Not denying that's what I'm doing. But the intensity of the camp is also weighing on Sophie, right? Like we have this moment where Evan and Sophie, who are in fact dating, they're chatting. Evan is very excited because he's 22. He can be invited to Coach Cole's clinic, which is basically like Slughorn's best, like that thing from Harry Potter, right? Like it's almost the same thing here, it feels like. But Sophie, Evan points out, like Sophie should be able to do better. She's not high in the rankings. He feels like she's not giving it all. And Sophie sort of admits, like, I'm not. Because I'm not enjoying myself. Like, I'm not having a good time here. And I actually will say, I loved this conversation between these two characters. This idea of, like, you can like hockey. You can love it. You can have a good time. But, like, if hockey's not going to be fun, you don't want to bother, right? Like, you can be very good at what you do. But if they're pushing you, you just end up not wanting to give it your all because you're not
I don't know, like, what the word is, but you're not feeling it. You're not connected to it, right?
Well, I think there's another layer to this as well. You could look at it, which I definitely resonate with, coming from like a overachiever background here. Sometimes it's okay to just be average. Like, sometimes it's okay to just be like, yeah, I went to this camp. It was really cool. I wasn't one of the top 20, but like, I had a really good time. And like, it doesn't sound like that's exactly where Sophie is, but right. I think what it's doing is opening up this space where you don't have to be the top of the pack for everything in order to find some level of satisfaction or enjoyment. And that, you know, being pursuing success as measured either by a Fitbit or by whatever metric you want is not the only option of how to live a life. And I actually think that's a great theme for a show.
You know what? You are 100% correct. That is very deep and true. And I feel like it should be a lesson that we take into our own lives, right? Like, you could, I mean, honestly, it ties very close to this psychotic idea of quiet quitting we've heard about. And it's just like, hey, that's not a thing. Shut up. Like, you know, like you're allowed to just do your job and go home, and that's fine. Like, you could just be average, and that's totally fine. We don't have to kill ourselves to like be the best at something. And especially for Sophie, you know, she kind of points out her experience before, especially with her parents and like all these other places she's been, has like worked her to the bone, and she hated that. And when she joined the Ducks, she was like, oh, I could just have fun and I can just do this and it's just a thing and I can have a good time. And this feels like the past, right? The other camps that she went to, she pointed out like it was like the time when her Ducks, the time she went to this girl empowerment camp, which is apparently extremely intense.
Man, I shouldn't make a joke about that. But man, the like getting a bunch of high achieving people together in one room could just really
amp it up. It really does. I've been in those situations and it's not great. It can get intense is definitely the word, but like the competitiveness is out of control and I think a little bit unhealthy. But then we find out shortly thereafter, right, that Sophie has a very good point about Nick kind of like getting too obsessed with this sort of stuff, because he makes Coach Cole's clinic and he's informed that Nick is missing and he just really wants to make the clinic rather than go out there and look for his friend. Sophie and the others go looking for him instead. This is a moment of like bad choice, like Evan, that's not cool, dude. Like a missing friend is a big deal. Like, maybe he hasn't missing that long, but still.
Yeah, I don't know that we got like the full resolution moral here in that regard. I think there's still another shoe to drop with regard to like Evan getting his priorities straight. And I think this is definitely a good example. I think it's good writing to kind of crystallize like where Evan is, where he differs from the rest of the team, and setting up a little bit of conflict moving forward, I think.
Yeah. And I'll tell you, though, who does have their priorities straight? Maya, because they all go looking. Maya is in the forest and she just nopes out of there. She's just like, oh, no, thank you. And I'm like, yes, correct. This is, this is the right call.
someone for everyone.
Yes. Very happy with that choice. We do see later when they can't find him, she's very emotionally torn up about it. Not, you know, her and Nick haven't shared a lot of time, but she does see him like a hamster who is also missing for her.
Yeah. Again, another, we'll see where this goes over the course of the season. I think, you know, I would say just narratively, like evaluating, like this was fine. It was fine. Yeah. It was an interest, like it broke us out of the fishbowl that they were in, the kind of literal hockey bowl that they were in. It took us, I still can't, I keep mentioning the Hilton Garden Inn, but like, what a product placement.
We're there now, right? Like he's missing, but then he hears the sounds of horns after almost passing out, Nick, and he stumbles into the Hilton Garden. Like you said, product placement, because they're also pumping up their cookies. I've never been to a Hilton Garden Inn, so I can't compare these cookie qualities.
Okay, this is the thing. I need to look this up now. I should have looked. I got to do my research here. But like, I know that the DoubleTree is known for its cookies. Literally, the front desk at the DoubleTree has a heater drawer where they keep the cookies in a sleeve so that they are warm when they are handed to you. Yeah, Kevin, I see your face. It is,
that is A plus. Yes.
So good. I used to go to Boston for work, and I would work at Harvard and Harvard Business School and meet with alumni there. And I still stayed at the DoubleTree across the river. One, because it had the most comfortable mattress I ever slept on. But two, is because of those freaking cookies.
Those cookies.
So I got to look up if the Hilton Garden Inn's got the cookie game going too. They're probably owned by the same people.
I mean, it's quite, I mean, there's usually like, right, a chain that is actually just like one person owns like three hotels and you had no idea. But if you didn't stay at the DoubleTree, probably the same situation, right? Like Nick tries to walk into like, con his way into a cookie and they're like, no, they refuse to give this messy child a cookie to eat, even though he comes in begging for one. Would you have denied the child a cookie?
That's the villain, right?
Yeah, like, you're right.
Not the villain. It is the person who puts the pizza in. I'm realizing now I must have deep-seated issues related to food. Or I'm just hungry. But like the person who puts a pizza in the trash and denies a child a warm cookie. Like,
yeah,
you go to hell.
You are the villain. And also the same hotel allows a child to sit at the bar, because when we see him slightly later, he is at the bar, only allowed to get, of course, a soda, which is fine. And that's where Alex ends up finding him. I will say I loved Nick's delivery, because Alex shows up with the like, oh, there you are, and he's just like, oh, you found me, like this like fake, you know. I deliver that line, if you've listened to me on podcast before here, you've heard me say the like, oh no, he died. It is the same delivery that Nick did, so I felt so seen in that moment as a person who delivers a very similar line in a very similar way. A+ for me.
Look, I mean, if we learned anything from season one, it's that Nick can deliver comedy in an incredible way.
That's very true.
And he's probably the only character that can actually get an audible laugh or guffaw out of me. And like, so I'm delighted to have him here. I'm delighted they're still leaning into his character. I do miss the podcast, the number two podcast in Southern Minnesota or whatever it was. But yeah, he's a great character, and we love to see him. Also, like the bartender being a punk about like, I'll give you unlimited Sprite if you just shut up. Like, okay, first of all,
you're a bartender. Buddy, you're one job.
You're a bartender at the Hilton Garden Inn. Okay, and like I have immense respect for people in service roles. I have immense respect for people who have to put up with like the general public, because let me tell you, I've been there. It sucks. Okay, but don't talk down to the kid. Give him a Sprite. And guess what? You were going to give him unlimited refills anyway. Okay, let me come down off of my soapbox here, because that one really set me off.
Yeah, it is a moment of just kind of like, what is wrong with the... And it is all food related, but it's true. There is a personal thing for all of us.
I just get sassy about food. Give me a podcast where I can just get sassy about food.
I mean, that sounds like a very delightful podcast, or at least a fun one to listen to. It would just make us hungry. But
speaking of making me hungry, I am literally now looking up the recipe for the DoubleTree cookies. So
you're going to make that at home?
Apparently Hilton Garden Inn is kind of a thing, but the DoubleTree cookies are the top tier. They're the S tier hotel cookie.
Well, now we know. And so if you are near a DoubleTree, book a stay for a night and get some cookies. At the bar, Nick talks to Alex. He mentions the fact that like, Alex was the one who didn't believe that they should even be there. So like he wanted to GTO. She points out that it wasn't that she didn't believe in them. It's that she didn't believe necessarily in the camp itself. The camp is too intense. Mm-hmm. And he was afraid to go back. She says, this is the reason you should, because he is actually very brave. He's a Green Lantern. It's not that he's not afraid of anything. It's that he has a power to overcome great fear. If there was a ring nearby, slip onto Nick's finger, I'd be fine with that. Give me Nick Green Lantern.
Oh my god! Like, wow, we don't have time to divulge to go good on that. But like, yes, please.
Oh my god! What another turn this season would have? And Alex successfully convinces him to go back. Right? I mean, we sort of knew that was going to happen. We have this reunion scene. I will say this ending scene is very interesting to me, because Evan, gives to me a very very weak apology. She gives him his stuffed pucky, which Nick is happy about. And then, you know, gives him a handshake. That's basically it. And Sophie, he points out, he says he feels really horrible. And Sophie says, good. Don't go changing on me, Mauro. I definitely think he's gonna, right? Like, I feel like this scene is very much setting up that Evan is going to be changed and is not doing the right things. It's like he's saying the right words, but he's not really feeling the right emotions.
No, I mean, like I said, I think there's another shoe to drop on the Evan of it all. I think what we've set up with this whole, maybe this whole season, but certainly this whole storyline, is like some people are going to make the cut and some people aren't going to make the cut. And Evan is definitely one who's like going to be enamored with being a part of, you know, in season one, it would have been the old Ducks. In season two here, it's being part of the top 20 or being picked for this game against Team Canada, I guess, is what we're being teased with. So I think there's going to be some tension there. I think if I like look ahead past this episode, I've not looked at any, you know, upcoming previews, but I have to wonder, like, are we in hockey camp all season long? And if so, like, how do we sustain this tension where we know that, like, there's going to be a cut at some point? And like, are we rushing them all up above the line somehow to have them all make the cut to be part of the team? Like, that's classic Mighty Ducks fashion, but I haven't really thought through that one too much.
That's actually a good point. I feel like there is going to be a level of this tension between the kids and the players, right, to start here. This is where we are, Evan making decisions. I think whether by accident or by unique skills, I think we're going to end up at a spot probably like partway through the season, right, where there are going to be cuts, but like Nick is safe because of his running that he did. Like he made it high enough at a certain point. Kub is probably going to excel at the VR and make his way through there. I feel like each one will find a skill to make them barely passable, but then a group will be cut and they'll find out that like if the longer it goes, the higher the chance that the rest of them will be cut out of it. And they're going to have to band together to work together to be like, we're going to have to be the team that comes at the end. Like, we're going to keep each other in the top spots so that way none of us gets cut. And I feel like that's going to have to be the unifying force leading into whatever the end game literally will be.
My hope with the second half of this season, you know, I mean, I know we're early days here, but my hope is that if we stay at the hockey camp for a prolonged period of time, and that ends up being the whole story of the season, that we get a lot more granularity and detail about some of the other players there. Because the non-Ducks players are basically the coach's son and Coug's roommate.
Fort Lauderdale, yeah.
Yeah, in Fort Lauderdale. And that's it. That's all we have. Everyone else is just like an avatar for like a mass of people. And one of the real delightful things about Mighty Ducks 2 was that we introduced each of these characters who were new Ducks or new members of Team USA, who each had their own like shtick or their own gimmick. And that's what I loved about season one too. It's like, yeah, is it reductive? You betcha. But guess what? That's why I watch these shows. And so I would love to see like some more characters get introduced that have a little bit more shtick to them and to, you know, cheer for and root for those players as well.
I could not agree more. Like, I mean it's so basic, but I also am that type where it's just like a group of people who have come together, each one has a specific skill, and they form a team, and it's goofy and silly, but like I'm super into it, right? Like, it's just reductive, sure, but like I don't know, it just works for me and I will love it every time. But I do want more of that. Like, again, we lost two characters that I really liked from season one. As far as the kids go, and we certainly have lost Bombay. So we really need some solid replacements. And I agree, we haven't quite felt it yet. I think, you know, they didn't practice during the off season. So the Ducks, Mighty Ducks Game Changers is coming back and trying to find its footing, I think, on the ice as we're two episodes in here. But hopefully, you know, hopefully they'll be able to pull it out and end on a very, very high note, which is around the campfire singing We Are the Champions.
Oh, gosh. I'm telling you, if anyone comes from Team Iceland in this season, I'm going to lose it. I'm going to throw my phone across the room, and I'm just like, someone pick up a beach ball and crush it, right?
Yes.
That's really what I need.
Yeah, we do need that energy. We need those like almost cartoonish villainy to show back up here, because that would be really fun. And especially if that ends up being Team Canada somehow. Like, imagine if they made somehow a team of villainous Canadians.
I would listen to this podcast. I mean, I'm going to listen to it anyway, but man, I would love to listen to that episode. If they introduce like Team Canada as a bunch of jerks, that'd yes. be so hilarious. I do think there's a potential, like if I were in the writer's room for Game Changers, I'd probably do an episode where they like go to the beach, or I do an episode where they like go out to the Hollywood sign, or they go like
hit the Southern California stuff, right? They gotta. And especially as a former California resident, I would really love that. Hit the California sites, do the classic California things, go to the Santa Monica Pier, go to Third Street Promenade, hit the Magic Castle if you can. Like, there's so many places you could go to in Los Angeles, and I would love to see the kids hit some of those. It would be very fun. Go to
South Central Los Angeles and find me a knuckle puck appearance, and I mean, will be delighted.
Yeah, Keenan's not doing much these days, right? Like, come on, get him in there. Like, That wraps up episode 2 here for the Mighty Ducks Game Changers. Troy, anything else for this episode or for the show that we may have missed? I feel like we got a good spread on the ice.
Come on. We talked about food. We talked about running. We talked about Walmart and snakes. What could we have possibly not talked about? I'll add one thing, because I can't miss the opportunity to answer a question when you ask it. I think my burning question as I look ahead is like, what are we doing with the coach here? Like, really, mm-hmm. what are we doing with Coach Cole as a character? Are we going to have a moment where he like cracks open like a walnut and he's like buttery on the inside? Or is he going to go down the route of just being more and more of a punk? That to me, like, I don't know how I would write that, which tells me this could be challenging to yes. continue to walk that line the rest of the season.
Because you can only walk it for so long, too. And I hope that they find a direction that they want to take him in quicker, sooner rather than later. Because, you said, you can only drag it out, right?
Here's what I'll say. If they do have a moment where he finally connects with Alex, like, deeply, and they're pursuing an interest, and they're really trying to, like, butter him up as someone lovable in some way, be on the lookout for who the new villain is, because mm-hmm. you always need an antagonist in there. And so I'll be curious to see, like, that's going to have to be someone that comes from the wings that isn't in the show right now. So keep your eyes peeled for that.
Yeah, absolutely. And we'll be doing that here, of course, every week as we cover Mighty Ducks Game Changers season 2, episode by episode. Melissa should be back next week with us. So
talking sadly, about villainous Team Canada. Yeah,
look at that. Knocking you out. Taking your spot on the ice. Really reclaiming her spot, I guess. She's coming back from her injury, Adam Bank style, you know?
Mm-hmm. Hey, I will happily give it up. I will knock the puck over to her blade on the ice and allow it to get up and through. Whatever. Okay, I'm going to stop the analogy now. Melissa, please come back and save me.
All right, well, Melissa will be back, and I'll be back next week as we will head into episode 3 of Game Changers. Until then, thanks for joining us, Troy. Quack, quack.
Quack, quack.